Ought not to be absolutely conceded that God is in the demons, but with this addition, insofar as there are certain things, huh? But in things which name a nature not deformed, absolutely one ought to say that God is, right? So maybe the word demon already includes in its meaning this deformity of will and so on that's in these demons. And therefore you don't say that God is there causing that deformity of will, right, huh? But he's responsible for the existence of the nature. So now we know that God is in all things, huh? Now, what about God being everywhere? To the second thus one proceeds, it seems that God is not everywhere. For to be everywhere signifies to be in every place. But to be in every place does not belong to God, to whom it does not belong to be in place. For bodiless things, as Boethius says in the book De Hebdomadibus, are not in place. Huh? Therefore God is not what? Everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Only bodies are in place, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I quoted that a famous opinion of the early Greeks before Aristotle. And when Aristotle takes a place in the fourth book of Natural Hearing, he says, it's a common opinion of the early philosophers that whatever he is must be somewhere. And if it isn't somewhere, it doesn't exist. But to be somewhere, to be contained in some place, is a property of the natural body, right? So the thinking that everything must be a body, or in a body, and if it isn't in a body, right, it isn't. And bodies are in place, right? So whatever he is must be somewhere, and somewhere it doesn't exist, right? It's like when they shot the cosmonauts there, the Russians, you know, and they had them called back to the Earth. There's no God up here! I see a lot of some attacks upon God, but at least I kind of takes a kick, you know, I should say, you know, using this occasion to say. I would be surprised if he's up there in the sense in which the asteroids or the comets and so on are up there. Okay. Moreover, as time has itself to successive things, so has itself place to things that what? Persist or remain. But one indivisible of action or of motion is not able to be in diverse times. So one now, right? So on, can't be in diverse times. Huh? And one indivisible of the action or motion can't be. Therefore, neither can one indivisible in the genus of primitive things be able to be in all places. But the divine being to be is not successive but permanent. Therefore God is not in many places, and thus he is not everywhere. Now, a lot of times people, you know, mix up the what? Indivisible that has a position in the continuous, right? With the indivisible that has no position in the continuous, huh? And you know, if you're talking about the indivisible in the sense of a point, that's either here or there, right? But is God indivisible in the way that a point is? No, no. He's entirely outside the genus, you might say, of the continuous, huh? So, it belongs to geometry to talk about the point as well as the continuous, because it's something in the continuous, right? But God is not something in the continuous like the point is, huh? Entirely outside the genus. And that problem comes up, you know, before, when we talk about the soul. And the whole soul is in every part of the body, right? And they say, well, but the soul is indivisible. How can it be? But they're thinking of the soul is being indivisible in the way that a point is, right? But the soul is indivisible in the genus of substance, not in the genus of quantity. Yeah? The point is indivisible in the genus of quantity and the genus of continuous quantity in particular, right? But there you see the necessity of what? Of transcending the imagination, right? See? You're trying to imagine the way in which God is indivisible, in the way that the indivisible is imagined. So you might imagine, you know, a line, and you co-imagine, you might say, the endpoints of the line, right? And so one's here and one's there. But God is not indivisible in that way. He's not in the genus of continuous quantity as something of it, something outside of all the genera. Moreover, what as a whole is somewhere, nothing of it is outside that place. But God, if he's in some place, the whole of God would be there. It could be part of him here and part of him there. He doesn't have any parts, right? For he has no parts. Therefore, nothing of him is outside that place. Therefore, God is not what? Everywhere, right? I can see, you know, what Thomas means when he speaks of the false imagination being the beginning, you know, of mistake and error. And false imagination can be imagining something other than it is, right? Which is a very common thing we do, right? You know, C.S. Lewis starts one of those stories where he goes to some part of England to visit, and he's picked up by an uncle or somebody, you know? And they're driving along in the car to be picked up at the train station or where it is. And he's remarking, you know, C.S. Lewis to his uncle, that this part of England looks much different than he thought it was, right? And but the way he imagined it to be, right? And you probably had this experience going to some place and that you heard about all your life or something. And you get there, and it's not the way you imagined it to be, right? And of course, the father or the uncle or whatever it is saying, well, what right did you have to imagine it to be that way, right? But your imagination does these things, right? You know, if you're going to meet a famous person, you imagine the way they're going to look, right? And they don't look the way you imagine them to be, huh? And but a fortiori, if you try to imagine something you can't imagine, right? Then necessarily you have false imagination, huh? And of course, we never think without imagining, huh? And so we have to negate what we imagine when we talk about that which cannot be imagined. So we say God is not a body, right? Okay? But God is not in the continuous, huh? Even though we're imagining something continuous when we say this. Because you have that problem in logic too, right? When they try to understand the universal, and Socrates is trying to understand the universal and the Parmenides, the dialogue. And you imagine the universal would be like a big sail covering things, right? But you'd have only part of the universal. You'd be part of man, I'd be another part of man, another part of man. The whole of what a man is would not be found in each one of us. So you're trying to imagine the way the universal is, and then you get falsehood, right? So that's why logic kind of disposes for wisdom, because to really do logic, you have to transcend the imagination to understand the universal. Then you get to these modern magicians and they'll want to substitute class for universal, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the class is like a collection you can kind of imagine like a crowd, right? So instead of understanding what man means, something one common to all men, right? Instead of all men, you imagine a multitude of men, right? As if that's what man means. But it doesn't mean that. To resolve into something imaginable, right? But against this is what is said in Jeremiah. Thomas have a commentary in Jeremiah? Chapter 23, verse 24. I, meaning God, fill what? Heaven and earth. Can't escape from this guy, huh? So, I answer it should be said that since place is a certain thing, for something to be in place can be understood in two ways. Either in the way of other things, that is, just as something is said to be in other things in some way, as accidents of place are said to be in place, or in the way that is private to place, as things, what, placed, are in place, right?